This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of ankle ligaments from the foot and ankle section on orthobullets.com. Let's start off this review about ankle ligaments going over ankle joint osteology. We'll talk about the ankle joint, the distal tibiofibular joint, and joint reaction forces. The ankle joint consists of the tibial plafond, the medial malleolus, the lateral malleolus, and the talus. As far as motion of the ankle joint, the main motion is plantar flexion and dorsiflexion. Secondary motions include inversion slash eversion and rotation. The distal tibiofibular joint consists of the distal fibula and the incisura fibularis, which is a concave surface of the distal lateral tibia. As far as motion of the distal tibiofibular joint, the fibula rotates within the incisura during gait. The mortise widens when the ankle goes from plantar flexion to dorsiflexion, and keep in mind that syndesmosis screws limits external rotation. As far as joint reaction force, the ankle joint absorbs 5 times body weight with walking on level surfaces. Now let's talk about ankle ligaments in a bit more detail. The primary ligaments of the ankle medially include the deltoid ligament and the calcaneonavicular ligament, otherwise known as the spring ligament. Ankle ligaments on the lateral side includes the syndesmosis, which specifically includes the AITFL, PITFL, TTFL, IOL, and ITL. Other ankle ligaments on the lateral side include the anterior talofibular ligament, or the ATFL, the posterior talofibular ligament, or the PTFL, the calcaneal fibular ligament, or the CFL, and the lateral talocalcaneal ligament, or the LTCL. Now, let's talk about the syndesmosis in a bit more detail. As far as the function of the syndesmosis, it's responsible for the integrity of the ankle mortise. As far as the anatomy, syndesmosis components include the anterior inferior tibiofibular ligament, or AITFL, the posterior inferior tibiofibular ligament, or the PITFL, and keep in mind that the deep portion of this ligament is sometimes referred to as the inferior transverse ligament. Other components of the syndesmosis includes the transverse tibiofibular ligament, or the TTFL, and the interosseous ligament, or the IOL. As far as the physical exam test to identify a syndesmosis injury, these include the external rotation test and the squeeze test. With respect to imaging, AP and mortise ankle radiographs are used to evaluate the tibiofibular clear space and tibiofibular overlap. The tibiofibular clear space should be less than 5 millimeters. Tibiofibular overlap for the AP view should be greater than 10 millimeters. Remember that the weight-bearing mortise view is the most accurate radiograph for diagnosis. Again, the weight-bearing mortise view is the most accurate radiograph for diagnosis. A CT scan is the most accurate for assessment, but true normals have not been validated, and comparison to the uninjured side is helpful. Again, CT scan is the most accurate for assessment, but true normals have not been validated, and comparison to the uninjured side is helpful. Clinical conditions involving syndesmosis injury includes a high ankle sprain and syndesmosis injury, as well as certain ankle fractures. Now let's talk about the anterior talofibular ligament, or ATFL, in a bit more detail. The function of the anterior talofibular ligament is that it's the primary restraint to inversion in plantar flexion. It also resists anterolateral translation of the talus and the mortise, and keep in mind that this is the weakest of the lateral ligaments. As far as the anatomy, the ATFL extends from the anteroinferior border of the fibula to the neck of the talus. The origin is 10 millimeters proximal to the tip of the fibula. It inserts directly distal to the articular cartilage of the talus, which is 18 millimeters distal to the joint line. It also runs 45 degrees to 90 degrees to the longitudinal axis of the tibia. Physical exam to test the ATFL is an anterior drawer in 20 degrees of plantar flexion. You will specifically test the competency by an anterior drawer in 20 degrees of plantar flexion and compare it to the uninjured side. Forward shift of more than 8 millimeters on a lateral radiograph is considered diagnostic for an ATFL tear. As far as imaging, stress radiographs are more accurate in chronic injuries, and MRI can diagnose the injury. Arthroscopic findings can confirm MRI imaging, and keep in mind that ultrasound is more accurate than radiographs. Clinical conditions involving ATFL injury include low ankle sprains. For more detail about low ankle sprains, listen to the podcast episode about ankle sprains. Now let's talk about the posterior talofibular ligament, or PTFL, in a bit more detail. As far as function, the posterior talofibular ligament is the strongest of the lateral ligaments. It plays only a supplementary role in ankle stability when the lateral ligament complex is intact. Keep in mind that the PTFL is under the greatest strain in ankle dorsiflexion and acts to limit posterior talar displacement within the mortise as well as talar external rotation. If the ATFL and CFL are incompetent, then short fibers of the PTFL restrict internal and external rotation, talar tilt, and dorsiflexion. Long fibers inhibit only external rotation, talar tilt, and dorsiflexion. As far as the anatomy of the posterior talofibular ligament, the origin is the posterior border of the fibula. It inserts on the posterolateral tubercle of the talus and runs perpendicular to the longitudinal axis of the tibia. On physical exam, there is no specific clinical test for an isolated PTFL injury. As far as imaging, MRI can indicate structural injury, however, this is rarely indicated. As far as relevant clinical conditions, the PTFL is rarely injured, except in association with a complete dislocation of the talus. Now let's talk about the calcaneal fibular ligament, or CFL, in a bit more detail. The CFL is the primary restraint to inversion in neutral or a dorsiflex position of the ankle. It restrains subtalar inversion, thereby limiting talar tilt within the mortise. As far as the anatomy, the origin of the CFL is the anterior border of the fibula, which is 9 mm proximal to the distal tip. It inserts on the calcaneus 13 mm distal to the subtalar joint and deep to the peroneal tendon sheaths. Physical exam to test for the CFL includes the inversion or supination test and the talar tilt test. The inversion or supination test is performed with the ankle in slight dorsiflexion. As far as the talar tilt test, keep in mind that the angle formed by the tibial plafond and the talar dome is measured as an inversion force applied to the hindfoot. Less than 5 degrees is normal for most ankles. The talar tilt test is useful for evaluation of combined injury of both the ATFL and CFL ligament. As far as relevant imaging, talar tilt radiographs and ankle arthrograms can be useful. With respect to ankle arthrograms, CFL rupture can lead to extra-articular dye leakage into the peroneal tendon sheath. An MRI can also diagnose calcaneofibular ligament injuries. As far as clinical conditions, CFL injury occurs with ankle inversion with the foot in the neutral position. The CFL can be injured in low ankle sprains. Now let's talk about the lateral talocalcaneal ligament, or LTCL, in a bit more detail. The LTCL is thought to stabilize the talocalcaneal joint. As far as the anatomy, the lateral talocalcaneal ligament is a short, narrow ligamentous band that connects the lateral process of the talus to the lateral surface of the calcaneus. It is located anterior and medial to the calcaneofibular ligament. As far as physical exam, there is no specific test for the lateral talocalcaneal ligament. As far as imaging, MRI can identify the LTCL ligament distinctly from the calcaneofibular ligament. Be sure to review the images on orthobullets.com to appreciate the relationship of the calcaneofibular ligament and the lateral talocalcaneal ligament. As far as relevant clinical conditions, the lateral talocalcaneal ligament is often injured in conjunction with ATFL injuries. The LTCL can also be injured in low ankle sprains. Now let's talk about the deltoid ligament in a bit more detail. The deltoid ligament functions as the primary restraint to valgus tilting of the talus. Both the superficial and deep layers of the deltoid ligament individually resist eversion of the hindfoot. The deltoid ligament stabilizes the ankle against plantar flexion, external rotation, and pronation. As far as the anatomy of the deltoid ligament, there's a superficial layer and a deep layer. The superficial layer crosses both the ankle and subtalar joints. It originates from the anterior colliculus and fans out to insert into the navicular neck of the talus, sustentaculum tali, and posterior medial talar tubercle. The tibiocalcaneal or sustentaculum tali portion is the strongest component in the superficial layer and resists calcaneal eversion. The deep layer of the deltoid ligament crosses only the ankle joint. It functions as the primary stabilizer of the medial ankle and specifically prevents lateral displacement and external rotation of the talus. The deep layer of the deltoid ligament originates from the inferior and posterior aspects of the medial malleolus and inserts on the medial and posterior medial aspects of the talus. The physical exam maneuver to test the deltoid ligament is the eversion test, and this is done with the ankle in neutral, and this evaluates the superficial layer of the deltoid ligament, while the external rotation test evaluates the syndesmosis and the deep layer of the deltoid ligament. As far as imaging, a mortise radiograph with medial clear space widening can suggest injury to the deltoid ligament. A gravity stress view can identify medial clear space widening. An MRI can provide detail on a normal deltoid ligament versus a ruptured deltoid ligament. Some clinical conditions to consider include an ankle fracture, in which injury occurs with pronation or eversion trauma leading to forced external rotation and abduction of the ankle. Deltoid ligament injury may occur in conjunction with fracture of the medial malleolus. The deltoid ligament can also be injured in the setting of a high ankle sprain and syndesmosis injury. Finally, let's talk about the calcaneonavicular ligament or spring ligament in a bit more detail. The calcaneonavicular ligament functions as a static stabilizer of the medial longitudinal arch and head of the talus. As far as the anatomy of the calcaneonavicular ligament, it attaches from the sustentaculum tali to the inferior aspect of the navicular. Physical exam in the setting of a calcaneonavicular ligament or spring ligament injury may show flattening of the medial longitudinal arch. You should always suspect injury in associated posterior tibial tendon pathology. As far as imaging, an MRI can diagnose a tear in the calcaneonavicular ligament. Some clinical conditions to consider include posterior tibial tendon dysfunction and acute spring ligament tear. In posterior tibial tendon dysfunction, the calcaneonavicular ligament is most likely to be attenuated in type 2 flat foot deformity secondary to posterior tibial tendon dysfunction. In the setting of an acute spring ligament tear, acute trauma can occur with forceful landing on a flat foot. The tibialis posterior tendon is usually normal in the setting of an acute spring ligament tear. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic has been tested on past exams. The first question reads, a 17-year-old basketball player sustained an inversion twisting injury to the left ankle with the foot plantar flexed approximately 20 degrees. Which of the following ankle ligaments is most likely to be injured by this mechanism? And the choices are 1. Anterior tibiofibular, 2. Posterior tibiofibular, 3. Anterior talofibular, 4. Calcaneofibular, and 5. Posterior talofibular. The correct answer to this question is 3. Anterior talofibular. So the lateral ankle is stabilized by the anterior talofibular, calcaneofibular, and posterior talofibular ligaments. With the ankle in neutral flexion, the anterior talofibular ligament is perpendicular to the long axis of the tibia. However, with ankle plantar flexion, this ligament becomes more parallel to the tibia and is at risk with an inversion sprain that most commonly occurs with the ankle in a plantar flex position. The calcaneofibular ligament is parallel to the tibia in neutral ankle flexion and is usually injured when the ankle is inverted in this neutral position. The posterior talofibular ligament is only injured in severe sprains that also disrupt the other two lateral ligaments. The anterior tibiofibular and posterior tibiofibular ligaments contribute to the ankle syndesmosis and are most commonly injured with ankle eversion and external rotation. Moving on to the next question. The spring ligament of the foot connects what two bones? And the choices are 1. Tibia and talus, 2. Talus and navicular, 3. Talus and calcaneus, 4. Calcaneus and cuboid, and 5. Calcaneus and navicular. The correct answer to this question is 5. Calcaneus and navicular. So the spring ligament is also known as the calcaneonavicular ligament and connects the calcaneus to the navicular. This ligament supports the talar head and is an important anatomic supporting structure of the medial longitudinal arch of the foot. And moving on to the final question, an eversion mechanism of injury is associated with which of the following ankle conditions? And the choices are 1. Peroneal tendon splits, 2. Osteochondral talar dome fracture, 3. Superficial peroneal nerve palsy, 4. Anterolateral soft tissue impingement, and 5. Fracture of the anterior colliculus. The The correct answer to this question is 5, fracture of the anterior colliculus. So a fracture of the anterior colliculus is typically the result of an eversion mechanism resulting in a bony avulsion of the deltoid ligament from the anterior colliculus of the medial malleolus. An inversion ankle injury typically involves ligamentous damage to the lateral ligaments of the ankle to include the anterior talofibular ligament and calcaneofibular ligament. Acute and particularly chronic ankle sprains also can have associated injuries. The inversion mechanism has been implicated in osteochondral and transchondral Taylor dome lesions, producing splits in the peroneus tendons and in the development of meniscoid and soft tissue impingement lesions in the anterolateral ankle. An inversion mechanism can also stretch the superficial peroneal nerve, leading to pain and paresthesias along its distribution. That's all for this review about ankle ligaments. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website or mobile app while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Also, if you aren't already, be sure to follow OrthoBullets on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for daily high-yield content. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all tomorrow right here on the OrthoBullets podcast.